This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. The recent Budget 2022 announcement included an allocation for the distribution of free personal hygiene kits every month to about 130,000 teenage girls from B40 families. So this is an important step towards tackling the very serious and heavy issue of period poverty, which, together with menstrual health, have been taboo topics in our society. It's not something that people have been very comfortable talking about, especially in public. But we are seeing more conversations about the need to tackle period poverty, especially from rural or underprivileged communities. So that's a very positive step. So joining me today to break down why we need to talk about period poverty, why we need to tackle it, are Assistant Professor Dr. Fatima Al-Attas, a sociologist from the International Islamic University, Malaysia, and Anja Julia Abu Bakar, the founder of Athena Empowers, a social enterprise focusing on combating period poverty in underprivileged communities. Thank you so much. How are both of you doing today?
Thank you so much, Anne. Very good, yeah.
Yeah, doing good.
So perhaps I'll start with a very basic question. And to you, Dr. Fatima, what exactly is period poverty?
Okay, I think this is the most basic but essential thing to clarify what period poverty is. So when talking about period poverty, we're actually looking at the ability of a menstruating person to manage their menstruation in a safe and healthy standard or in a safe and healthy way. So we look at four elements. Number one is the period product. So we have the disposable sanitary pad, we have the reusable sanitary pad, then we have tampons, menstrual cups, and other forms of period product. Bottom line is it has to be clean, it has to be absorbent, or it has to be able to hold the blood in a way that is safe and allows women to go out and participate in social life. So that's the first element. The second element would be wash facilities. So wash facilities is access to clean water, sanitation, disposal management. Say, for example, they're using a disposable sanitary pad, they have a safe space, or they have the ability to dispose of the sanitary pad. And then we also need to make sure that there's toilets and also hand soap. So these are things relating to wash facilities. And then we also need to make sure the third element is education about menstruation. So understanding the menstrual cycle, sexual reproductive health, how to manage menstruation in a safe and healthy way is also one of the elements. And then finally is privacy, or the ability to manage their menstruation or their menstrual hygiene in a dignified way, meaning that if there are toilets, they can lock the toilets, or they're not being exposed. They have a safe space where they're not being shamed to manage their menstruation. So that's all the four elements. So from here, we can identify that most of the conversation that we're having focuses on only on the first element, mm-hmm. Without looking at the three other elements. So we need to make sure that we have a inclusive kind of conversation in understanding all of the four elements.
Mm. That's a very important point you brought up, because you're right. I think when we talk about period poverty, everyone thinks, oh, you just need the products, right? But it's not. There's so many, so much more to it. So then, who are the people, who are the girls or women that are most at risk of period poverty, and why?
Okay, I'm going to explain the context of Malaysia based what I know and the conversations that I've had with grassroots actors like Puan Anja herself and other NGOs and NGIs who have been working on the ground. So we have different identities of women and girls who are affected by period poverty. The severe cases would be those who are living in very rural, remote areas, who may not have access to aid and things like that. So they don't have access to clean water, they don't have access to wash facilities, they don't have access to products, they don't have access to privacy, and they might not also have access to knowledge about menstruation and menstrual cycle. So this includes stateless women and children in Sabah and Sarawak, in the very remote rural areas. And then we also have women and girls, for example, who may be refugees, who do not have access as well. And then we may be looking at homeless women. And also these are example of severe cases who may not have access to wash facilities, products, and privacy. So they may have had education, but they may not have the other three items. And then we may also look at urban poor women and girls. So they may be affected differently, and the impacts on them may also be different. So it depends really on, for example, not having access to products just because they don't have the monetary, you know, they just don't have enough money to purchase the products. Or they may be in a space where there's no clean water, or their house is not have not does not have access to water, they don't have privacy at home, or when they go back to school, the school itself does not have good facilities to manage that. And then we have like general population issues, like issues about menstrual hygiene, health, education about menstruation, and also, for example, not knowing how much pad you need to use on a daily basis, right? And then you don't use enough actually for your menstrual hygiene. So things like that, they sort of affect one another. There are four elements, and then that would affect women. So we're actually looking at a diverse group of women who may be affected differently by period poverty. So it's not necessarily just because of a poverty issue. It may be also because at the national level or at the policy level, a lack of understanding of equality for women or for menstruating bodies.
Yeah, and because, you know, you laid it out so clearly, right? There are four elements to it. And if you look at each different element, then you understand that it's not just always about money just because the word poverty is in there, even though, you know, financial issues definitely are a huge factor. But there's also other things, right? If you have the money but you don't have the facilities, there's not much that you can do about it. Anja, you've worked with young women from rural and underprivileged communities. You know, I understand your journey with Athena also started from in Sabah, right? What have you heard from these women and girls that you've worked with when it comes to their struggles with period poverty?
Okay, but I just want to add that before I go to your question, yes, Suen, that I noticed, I mean, when we work with the grassroots, they're mostly because of having a low income. And they only, if they only carry enough money to choose between food and other product, of course, we know what they choose, right? So not about sanitary pad alone, but there are many other things that they need to prioritize over the sanitary products. Back to your question. It's all started way back into 2012. I learned about girls that absent from school 5 to 7 days of school in a month when due to lack of access to sanitary product. It is really a shock because I have no idea that Malaysia is having these issues. And I thought maybe less than 100 or maybe like hundreds of girls. There's another second shock when it's more than that. It's like thousands of girls affected with these issues. And when I was first approached by the group of missionaries in Sabah, and when they asked for donation, I thought like maybe only happened to two or three girls. So when they said 33 girls, at that time I didn't respond to their ask because I just like started doing the business for full time, and to offer 33 sets of sanitary product is quite a big cost to me. But nevertheless, we decided to just donate them because we know in the end, we believe of, with the work that they do, because we have no idea what's happening there. And it started only when they shared the photos that they have delivered, distribute the pads and shows the face of the girls. That's when I started to ask questions like, what actually happened? And in what ways can I offer more products to them? But in the same time, I can still survive running my own business. This is when I was introduced to the same month in December when I had the opportunity to meet the social guru himself, Dr. Prof. Muhammad Yunus. I heard of the word social business first from him. So I Googled and then I understand more. And I thought back then, maybe this is the one. This is the one that I've been looking for, a model that can be used to support more communities, especially girls that need access to sanitary products. So that's all how it started lah.
What do you hear, you know, what are they most, I guess, worried about or their concerns when they get their period but they don't have, you know, sanitary products?
Okay, it took months later on when I go and do some more research. The worry is about they're not using a proper sanitary product. Yes, I thought first they make excuses because you can use towels, tissues or whatever stuff to, I mean, as a substitute to sanitary product. But the worry is more about what if it's leaked. It happened. They've seen among their friends that they have stained their school uniform. So, you know, 13, 14 years old kan, baru just got their period, and you have to put yourself in a 13-year-old, 14-year-old who, I mean, lack of knowledge, lack of information, and something like this, something that they cannot handle. What if it's leaked and everyone see and they just cannot go through that journey, that experience or nightmare? And so decided to just absent for 5 to 7 days. And there are another worry is that they miss a lot of things, and not like those people in the big city. These girls, the most happiest moment is when they are in school, that where they have met friends and staying actually, whether in the room, hostel or at home, they're not happy about it. So it's like mixed feelings. And until when we come and educate them, regardless in what situation, they have to always respect themselves, that knowing that education is important. Yes, some of them may have to like miss school due to whatever reason, but always find ways to keep on learning. So there's a lot of things that we actually teach them, but this is at least the best that we can do because we are not trainers or certified facilitators. We just get a mentor by Plan International, who have done this many, many, many years all around the world. So we approach them, get mentored by them, and use and tweak the content that can be used locally here in Malaysia.
So if I could ask you something that came up recently after the budget announcement, you know, there was a comment made by Pejuang Women's Youth Chief Nurul Ashikin Mabawi, who said that, you know, she has heard of instances where some women choose to get pregnant to avoid getting their periods. You know, of course, there were people who commented online that, you know, this wasn't logical, you know, that this couldn't be happening in Malaysia. But is that true? You know, have you heard or seen of these instances?
All right. Frankly, this is I also found out about this from readings. I mean, not from earlier 1 or 2 years actually. Until like a friend of mine, Monica in Sabah, she also have like questions. Some rural woman about that it is actually happening, where they decided to get pregnant due to no need to buy sanitary product. Because, okay, when they get pregnant after they give birth, normally they breastfeed the baby, then they won't get period for the next 2 or 3 years. So they won't have to think about buying that sanitary product. But yes, I agree. People will ask, what about baby? Cost of to take care of baby is even higher. But they breastfeed. They don't have to think about buying formula milk. And they eat whatever that surround their house, what they plant. I mean, food is also not that hard to find. And they use the traditional diaper, the cloth diaper. And when we talk about family planning, they can just go to clinic to get inject so that they weren't pregnant. But they have no idea. They really no idea about that things that exist. These are among young mothers, about those yang below 30. When the husband working, and when the needs come, and they cannot refuse. So they just follow. They just, if get pregnant is something that can save some money buying sanitary product, they will just continue with it. And because the husband is the only one that sole breadwinner, jadi they just like not to us lah. And sometimes husband also said it's quite costly for them to for him to pay to buy. So that's the among the recent response shared by Monica.
Dr. Fatima, I think a lot of people think that sanitary products are cheap, but what is cheap to one person may not necessarily be cheap to another family, isn't it?
Correct. I think maybe I would like to add also that we need to think about context as well when we're thinking about what is logical, what is not logical. Of course, in the urban area, raising children is expensive, and we know that. So we have to be able to distinguish what urban poverty looks like and what rural poverty looks like, and also the worldview of different people and the needs that they're going through. So if we're looking at reasons for pregnancy, whether it is frequent pregnancies, we cannot just simplify it to they get pregnant because they don't want to buy sanitary pad. Human decisions are not so simple like that. There will be other forces that will come into play, just like Puan Anja mentioned just now, lack of education about menstruation, about reproductive health, their worldview of, for example, what does a child mean, responding to the needs of their husbands, for example, and also the way that they live their life in terms of needing to purchase things or whether they can get aid and things like that. So we really have to discuss things in a, you know, more in a better inclusive kind of conversation rather than to say A plus B equals to C. That's, you know, that's not how human lives work. Okay, so in terms of whether or not things are cheap or expensive, we have to really understand how inequality works and the, you know, the widening gap of inequality in terms of our country and the context in which we live in. So my research is on the urban poor. Looking at girls. So we're looking at girls living in the PPR flats or the PPR housing areas. And among the people that we interview are people with big family members. So sometimes they, like, at the highest number of children that I've interviewed is 11 children, and 9 of the children are girls. So it's different than if you have like 5 kids and all of them are boys, you know. So in one house or one family, it's not always the same number of menstruating people in the house, right? So as the number increases, then the demand is also higher. And then also when we interview the girls, sometimes they say they have menstrual product, but upon clarification, upon asking more, we find that they may have 1 or 2, you know, they don't have enough. So technically, they don't have enough. So I think it's very insensitive and, you know, lack of empathy for us to think that, oh, they have pads, they can buy pads. But you also have to consider how much pads are needed for a full cycle in order for it to be a healthy management of menstrual health. Because this is a basic right or basic needs for menstruating bodies. So it's not really something where you, like, if you don't have enough, you just use one. So we have had reports of cases like that where in a family where there's a lot of girls, the mothers usually will be the one that purchases it based off the budget that the father provides, the amount of money that the father provides. And this is usually not always an easy kind of interaction in terms of asking for money. So again, we have to understand context of family finances, who is making the decisions, whether or not this person understands menstrual health needs and things like that. And then they may buy one lump for a month, and then across the children, they will have to use it. And I think what I also want to emphasize is that sometimes people don't know they're going through period poverty. They may not realize it. So it's not always a sad story, a sad case, because if it's something that's been accustomed to, something that they're used to, they may just think that's normal. So mom buys a pack of sanitary pad. Whoever gets it. Who doesn't get it, that's too bad for you. You try again, you know, next month. If you don't get it, then you stay home. So for some of the girls that we interviewed, they don't find that that's a problem. And they do think that they have sanitary pad and they have enough. So sometimes they have to skim, like use one, or they may not have enough and they have to think about how to buy it themselves because that's not something that's provided by their parents. Sometimes they'll ask from the teachers at school, or they'll go home from school. So we can actually see a system, right? The children, children are dependent on their parents in terms of providing for things. And then they may ask for help from teachers at school. So we can see actually a system of support that can be built around to address that issue so that we can understand what's happening. And we can also take notice of how many girls are actually going through this kind of issues. So, but if we all sort of don't think much about it, sometimes girls are just sent home because they don't have sanitary pads. Then we would have another problem. Yeah, so definitely agree with, you know, what is cheap and expensive is very much dependent on people's income and also how many people are actually needed, how many people are actually using the products at home, and then also how much do they use, because that would definitely depend on the flow of menstruation that they have. So whether it's heavy flow or not, whether they're sensitive to the material of the sanitary pad, because not all sanitary pads are the same. The cheaper ones may have caused certain types of reactions to their skins and things like that. So we have to think about those things, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that's a lot to think about, right? Especially when you think about how the different contexts and then the individual's bodies as well. You know, this, it's really such a complex and nuanced issue. Let's go for a very quick break now. I'm speaking to Assistant Professor Dr. Fatima Al-Atta, sociologist from the International Islamic University, Malaysia, as well as Anja Julia Abu Bakar, the founder of Athena Empowers. And we're discussing period poverty in Malaysia and the and the factors that, and the context that is very important for people to understand when we discuss period poverty. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Su An. Joining me today via Zoom are Assistant Professor Dr. Fatima Al-Atta, sociologist from International Islamic University, Malaysia, and Anja Julia Abu Bakar, founder of Athena Empowers, and we're discussing the topic of period poverty coming off the recent budget announcement that the government will be distributing free personal hygiene kits every month to about 130,000 teenage girls from B40 families. And that has also generated quite a lot of discussion, especially online, about the fact that period poverty does exist in Malaysia, and that, you know, there are different situations for different girls and different young women across the country, depending on which community you're looking at. Now, Puan Anja, you talked about this earlier a bit, you know, the fact that children miss school, children may just stay at home. I think you alluded to that as well, Dr. Fatima, but what are the costs of period poverty when we look at it both directly and indirectly, you know? And I'll start with you first, perhaps, Dr. Fatima. What have you observed in terms of its impact on the lives and well-being of girls and women?
I think firstly, we have to undeniably talk about the health impacts of period poverty, right? So not being able to access clean and hygienic ways of managing the menstruation would have health impacts depending on how severe it is. So from like toxic shock syndrome reactions to their skins and things like that. And then we also have mental health impacts when we're looking at taboo, stigma of the other impacts on maybe not being able to manage it, the stress of trying to get through it. And with young people, for example, their peer interaction is also very important. So how's that impacting their mental health, and how period poverty is impacting their mental health in terms of not having access to social life? And then we have that impact, the social impact and the impact on their life opportunities. And I think for me, this is key. This is really important, because we can sort of, or we've been taught to sort of shut our eye to it because we think it's like a female issue, it's just a small thing, don't make it a big deal. And that really has to do with the stigma of menstruation in general anyway. So we're looking at, for young girls, we're looking at missing out on school. So if you start menstruation at 9 years old, like a very young age, or if you start menstruation even at 12 years old, if you're looking at missing out on 7 days a month, or some we find that they may miss out less than 7 days, maybe 5 days a month, that's still in a year, that's like 2 months of school. You've missed out 2 months of school, and that would have like detrimental impacts in the long term in terms of their accessibility. So even though in Malaysia our girls are outperforming boys at school, it doesn't mean that the girls are, this is like all girls. We have to also see that, you know, the diversity of girls in terms of the different identities that they carry and their life opportunities later on. That's like teenage girls or like girls at school age, access to school. Some of them don't go to school at all because they're, you know, women and girls, and because they can menstruate. And in some contexts, like in the really rural, remote areas, this is problematic. Like their existence and their ability to menstruate and things like that becomes problematic for their families. So they're just, you know, kept at home anyway. So they lose complete access to education. And we know that education in life chances is a really big factor. So we know that that has that impact. And then if we look at adult women, that's also access to social life, whether it's for them to work, whether to for them to, you know, live their life. So the impacts would be large, and the impacts are already big. It's just that because we have not, you know, given enough attention to look into them and to give out the right data for that, so that we don't see it sort of being, you know, shunned away or like being concealed.
Mm. Anja, what impact, what changes have you seen, you know, after through the work that you do with Athena Empowers, you know, by providing sanitary products to girls and young women who don't have access to them? How has that changed them and especially their access to education?
Okay, because different tribe, different communities, different outcome. For example, as early as when we work after we sponsored the pets in Nabawan in Keningau, Sabah, it's more on the educational outcome, because how we help back then is we just want to know that there be no more absenteeism due to period. There might be like ponting or absent due to other issues, but that is what the outcome that we want, is that the increase of school attendance, not absenteeism. Because on the educational part, this is when they are not able to go to school, it will leads to low motivational, low self-esteem. So that is how Athena, our concern when we started lah, and not so much on other issues. It's all about the girls. So working with Orang Asli communities, for example, we work with various organizations like My Harapan. We work with volunteers who join us, do annual programs with Orang Asli. This Orang Asli, when they attend primary school, they went to Orang Asli school. But when they moved to secondary, it's like mixed school. So like a culture shock. And when people mock them, kata, eh, you orang asli, you makan pisang ke? So dia macam, dia dah start very, very emotional, very, very sensitive. So I...
It's the stigma.
Stigma. You need to fight. Because why? What's wrong with eating banana? It's healthy. Rather than you eat nasi lemak, I teach them how to fight their right. And I guess whether they are in in rural Sabah, Sarawak, or Orang Asli, what the best part is when we see the change of behavior, that previously they don't talk enough, but now, in fact, we have a WhatsApp group. From last time when they are in standard 5, now they are form 4. Whenever I want to go to their area, we just arrange to meet them. So happy to see that 100% of them are still in school. That matters. That's what we want to achieve. So it's not just about teaching them, giving them product, but you have to build relationship to have the trust. Yeah.
I do want to ask you something. Dr. Fatima brought up that one part of period poverty is ensuring that they have adequate wash facilities. Now, I understand Athena Empowers provides reusable pads, right? Which means that the girls and women who use it have to will need clean water sources, places for sanitation. Has that been a problem? You know, how do you tackle that?
Yes. That's why we cannot distribute or sponsor to maybe homeless, because they themselves don't have proper home and washing issue. Although we heard that they reuse the disposable pad, they even I've seen in even in Kuala Lumpur that they wash and they hang dry the used disposable pad. So meaning they still have they still concerned about the hygiene issue. They wash the disposable, hang it, and then reuse again. Whether it absorb or not, I have no idea. But of course, our concern. We will ask the our partner NGO or even school. Do they have issues with water? If not, yes, because we even contacted by international NGO like wanted us to sponsor. They want to buy sponsors to those in Palestine, for example. I said first check whether they have water issue or not. If they have, then we cannot. I mean, of course we want to sell, but then it won't fulfill if they don't have access to water.
If they don't have access to water, water supply, disposable pads are better and safer, right? Because there's also the physical health issue to think about.
Yeah.
Let's talk about having these conversations. You know, we've seen a lot more people talking, especially we're seeing a lot more women and girls talking openly about their periods, about their menstrual cycles, how it affects them, and some even sharing, you know, when they themselves had instances where they cannot afford menstrual products. Why is it important for these conversations to happen, both online and also offline?
I'm really glad that you brought this up, because this is such an important thing when we're talking about menstruation in general. Because menstruation is usually shrouded in what we call a culture of concealment. So everything about menstruation is concealed. If we, you know, think back on our experience growing up, we might not be, you know, we might not have been taught to use the word period or menstruation. You know, we use another term to conceal what it is. If we have period, we won't say that I'm on my period. We will say something else, like a friend is coming or like red flag or something. If we need sanitary pad, we won't say I need sanitary pad. We'll ask, you know, we'll whisper it to our friend or ask, you know. And I think maybe in some places in Malaysia, this may still be the practice that if you buy sanitary pad, you have to put it in a bag that covers the packet. So even though if it's a clean sanitary pad packet, you still need to like make sure that nobody sees it. So the fact that these conversations are being had is like really good progress, because the reasons why we haven't been able to address a lot of these issues is because we've not had these conversations. We've not had these conversations in private spaces. And we find that like even between children and parents, sometimes the conversations are very difficult and very awkward. And that also means that in bigger spaces, like at school, at, you know, workplace, you know, the needs of workers and their menstrual hygiene management. And then obviously at a higher level, at the governmental level, we've not had this kind of open discussions. And it's strange to think that women have been menstruating since the beginning of time. And the kind of products that we have, you know, the kinds of technology and design that we have is so limited. You know, we can go to space now, but we haven't sorted out, you know, menstrual hygiene management in a way that's safe. Just like how we mentioned just now, in the cases of like rural remote areas, disposable sanitary pad may be very good for them in terms of wash facilities. But then what we find also is that when we send out disposable sanitary pad to really rural remote areas, there's no disposal management. So when the NGOs come back again, we find floating sanitary pad plastics on, you know, around. So that's also not good. You know, that's something that we need to tackle, and we need to talk, find ways to solve it. But we cannot do that if nobody is allowed to talk about it. So I suppose we have to give thanks to social media and how well Malaysians use social media in terms of opening up the space and platform for women and girls to speak up about menstrual hygiene. Yeah.
Mm. And definitely, you know, we shouldn't be denying that this exists, right? It is a very real problem that does exist, regardless of whether you yourself have encountered such instances or not. Anja, what did you think of the budget allocation, you know, that the government is planning? I think it's the first time that the budget has included a section on providing hygiene kits. You know, is that an important first step towards tackling period poverty?
Yes. Okay. there are a lot of pros and cons on that. But when we talk about the figure, I can't comment much because this is our first time. Mm-hmm. We never know whether it's enough or not enough. Maybe, it can be only measured after they have gone through, mm-hmm. run, and then after they've seen how the reality, the numbers of people out there. And I also have no idea whether how long will this be continued forever. Any time frame, but I guess as long as you have to start something, you cannot like keep on do the research, but nothing happened. I guess what we want to see here is the outcome. Will they achieve whatever target they want to achieve? But not only like distributing, maybe do some education as well. But there's some measures can be taken, and we'll just wait after they run the activity. So that's only from that we know how effective, enough or not enough.
Yeah, that's true. Before we wrap up the conversation, you know, I'll start with you first, Anja. What would you like to see, especially from policymakers, to better tackle period poverty in Malaysia?
Okay, as what Dr. Fatima have shared earlier from the first question just now, is that not only supply, but get to know to the grassroots, really have a plan to get like focus group to discuss further with those working with grassroots, especially NGOs, social entrepreneurs, and to get more feedbacks. I mean, you can still continue distributing the pack, but what else? So that you know that this is not something that one like touch and go as an entrepreneur. Or as rakyat, what I like to see is that where will this leads to? What other actions will be taken after this? I would like to know more.
Mm, it's a continuous process, isn't it? Dr. Fatima, what would you like to see from policymakers to show that this is something that they take seriously?
All right. I definitely agree with Anja on, you know, building an ecosystem. So it has to be a sustainable ecosystem, not really just like a top-down kind of approach, like the top makes the decision. We need to understand what it is. We want transparency. Like, I want transparency. I want to know where are the numbers coming from, who are going to be the recipients, how are they going to distribute it, what are they distributing? Are they distributing disposable sanitary pads, or are they ranging on things? And then what further national kind of level data is there going to be? So I think, you know, we need to work together as a society. It shouldn't just be placing all the responsibility or just putting all of the work on the government. It should also be a good ecosystem. So that would be something that I'd like to see, you know, that we collaboratively work on addressing period poverty as a society, that it's not something that we're not sure what's happening. We also want to know how well things are going in terms of, you know, looking at the progression. And then we want to know what next, you know, how do we ensure that it's a sustainable kind of initiative? By sustainability, it's not just like environmentally sustainable, but it can be something that we can address period poverty and, you know, hope to aim that we can at some level eradicate it, or, you know, we bring it down to a point where it's very, you know, it's like ad hoc cases, not rather than long-term issues. Like ad hoc cases would be like cases where there's like a flood. So we know that, okay, we need to make sure that we have mainstreamed it so that we know that, for example, JKM offices knows that sanitary pads should be one of the things that has to be delivered, or making sure things like that are already in place. So that would be something that's more long-term, more realistic and genuine.
All right. Thank you both so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue-Ann.
I've been speaking to Assistant Professor Dr. Fatima Al-Atta, sociologist from the International Islamic University Malaysia, and Anja Julia Abu Bakar, founder of Athena Empowers, and we've been discussing the importance of tackling period poverty in Malaysia and the multiple factors that lie behind period poverty, and as well as, you know, from there, how we can tackle it. If you missed any part of today's show or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can download the podcast on bfm.my or on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn with me, Lim Suen, on The Bigger Picture, PFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.